means the bar's higher, but the bar is usually higher for a reason. Usually means there's more opportunity. That's why I love those kinds of scenarios. I think if you shy away from competition, you'll never be your best version of yourself.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Naked Truth about real estate investing. And today we got Brendan Bateman. He is a digital marketer. He helps you find motivated seller leads, pay-per-click, SEO, Facebook. And we're going to chat about, you know, just kind of how his, all the data that he has. He has so many clients across the country. And he's able to pick and choose like the top clients and then, you know, maybe the bottom clients and kind of get them together or just kind of talk in a strategy session to get the guys that are not doing as well to come up, right? Because he has so much data that he knows, you know, what you need to do or what's the best strategy as far as your closing, things like that. We're going to talk about that, like one of the three things that, top three things that that you should do right away, right from closing, because it's not just getting lead flow, but you still got to close. But he got all this data. He's got his companies that close, and he shares that information with everybody all his clients to help you close more projects. So I'm very excited to have somebody to talk about PPC and Facebook ads and SEO. So Brendan, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, great to meet you, Javier. So yeah, I am a little bit backwards from most people in this industry. I'd say I'm a marketer first, real estate investor second. I started out with a big passion for marketing. And at some point along the way, ran into a company that was looking to generate motivated seller leads and learned a lot about that. Started working with other companies doing that. And then today we're working with over 150 across all kinds of different markets across the United States. And then, you know, through the process, met the right people and everything like that to become involved as an investor myself, mostly passively, just in other people's deals and things like that. So anyways, yeah, marketing's what I do. Real estate's where I put my money after I make it in marketing. And the real estate investing industry is definitely pretty much the only thing I do right now from a marketing standpoint.
Awesome. Yeah. So that's a story I hear pretty quite often, right? Somebody has, you know, somebody's a doctor, marketer, somebody's got a successful business, right? And they still want to do some type of real estate, right? Some kind of investing, either active or passive. And they grab their funds from one place and put them on some passive and, you know, just grow their portfolio. And some people want to do real estate full time. Some people just love what they do, right? And they do a great job. So they don't necessarily have to do real estate full time. So tell me, you ran into somebody saying, hey, I'm looking for motivated seller leads. And you're like, well, hey, I'm a marketer. I'm like, yeah, you know, I can, you know, what was your thought process? Like, yeah, I can find you somebody that needs to sell their property fast. I mean, what was your thought process?
Well, it was kind of wacky because I was used to selling things, not trying to buy things. And I was like, wait, you're not trying to like sell houses. You're trying to buy houses. It was just a wacky thought. But anyways, I realized that there is a market for it. Absolutely. And there are motivated sellers out there and they can be reached digitally. This company was, I don't know if you know Wholesaling Inc. Or Cody Hoffman at all. Yeah, so Cody Hoffman and Tom Kroll co-founded it. Turns out this company that I ran into was Cody Hoffman's company in Utah. I hadn't known that, but we, over the course of a few years, took him from like break even in digital marketing from like as a channel as the business to they did over $1 million in like net profits from digital marketing after a few years. And it was quite a transformation. So that's where they started introducing me to a lot of their students that they had brought through the program and stuff like that. That's where we really got kind of ingrained in this, in this industry. But yeah, before I was still running an agency, so the same thing, but I was just doing it a lot worse. I was really passionate about marketing. I loved solving problems, stuff like that. Kind of like a lot of real estate investors out there. I think I was just kind of chasing deals, looking for new companies to do stuff with. And I really enjoyed that. I think I learned a ton through all of that. But for me, things really took off when we focused just on the real estate investing industry. We focused on how we could scale that. Because on one hand, we got way more efficient from a fulfillment standpoint and more scalable. And on the other hand, we actually finally got a hold of something that we could truly be the best in the world at. And that's kind of the passion that's driven me since, is how can we be the absolute best at this? And over time, I've really come to treat my company like a tech company, a little bit more than a services company. Like if you look at a services company, usually like the first company they serve is the one they serve best because they have the most attention, most resources there, et cetera. And then the whole goal of a services company is to not deteriorate that as they scale. Whereas if you look at a tech company, their last customer is the one that gets the best quality, not the first one. And we're definitely on the other side because we're like every client that we take, we have more data. We have the largest database that exists in this industry right now when it comes to digital marketing results. And there's more learnings and we compound those, we aggregate those across our clients. So it's that's been what's really been impactful for me because we went from being kind of okay at a few things and trying to scale and facing that challenge that services companies do where things get worse as they try to scale to becoming more of a technology company where now every client we take on, all of the clients we already have are getting a better service.
Great. So you do Facebook, SEO, pay-per-click, just to name a few. I'm not sure. I'm sure you have other services.
No, just those three. You nailed it. Three.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was one of my questions, right? So, you know, with Wholesale Inc. and all that, I mean, you had a, you know, I'm sure a pretty wide base of clients, right? So that I was going to ask you that question. You kind of answered it is, you know, you're able to take data, right? And data is just super important because you can have a similar market and somebody becomes a client and you have an idea what the roadmap's going to be, right? Like, hey, look, because we've got so much, this is probably the best way for you to start or for us to work with you. So tell me if I'm not correct. Am I wrong or is that pretty good?
No, it absolutely is, okay. is very valuable and in a lot more ways than that, honestly. Like there's, I don't want to get super data heavy or, you know, go down some crazy rabbit hole here, but the reality is data in digital marketing is everything. Like, cause all digital marketing, whether you want it to or not, is driven by algorithms. Those algorithms perform as well as the data that we feed them. So a lot of it falls even beyond what I know. For example, it's not that I just know that in Charlotte that this kind of thing is going to work because I've seen it work for another client or whatever the case is. It's that the algorithm knows and we can feed that algorithm the right kind of information. And that's powerful enough that I would say, like, theoretically, let's just say you read a book about PPC and it's you versus me. We're trying to see who can run the most effective marketing campaign. I believe that if I gave you all our data and you ran a campaign versus me running the campaign with everything I know, but none of our data, I think yours would perform better. I genuinely believe that. And it's a factor of how powerful that database is because everything starts with the data in this industry and specifically on the digital marketing side, like on a level that's just so much higher than most people even can understand. That has a huge, huge impact.
Yeah, definitely for sure. When I used to do single family, I did pay-per-click for a while. I never did SEO. And right before I started doing Facebook, that's when I switched over to commercial. And I remember I did it by myself. I think I hired a company, but they didn't really do real estate. And it back then was it was a pretty high budget, right? But I did get my best leads actually from pay-per-click. You know, I didn't get as many, but they were really, really high quality. I can tell you that. I remember that. It was my most costly, but they were good. And I did it for a while, but you know, I wish I would have found somebody or a company or somebody to do it for me. Cause I would gladly have paid them just because, you know, I'm either going to pay to learn or just pay to have somebody, you know, that already has the expertise. So do you get a lot of people that come to you that say, hey, I've done it by myself. I can do a good job or et cetera. Or maybe they just say, I'm tired of doing it. And then they come and they become a client, especially like on the pay-per-click.
Yeah, that's a good question. I have run into people that have done it themselves. And it's like for the most part, it doesn't go well. There's some people that do well and some people that do exceptionally well doing it themselves. If they get it dialed in well. The fact of the matter is I think most people don't have the personality for it or the focus in their business. And if they do, usually someone else could do better with more data. So that's kind of the situation. But I think one thing about doing it themselves that the reason some people get results is they're more patient with themselves than they are with an agency. So they're more willing to kind of see it through. A lot of people just give up early when they delegate it because they don't know how it works and they feel like they don't know what's going on. And you know, you can have a campaign perfectly on track and someone freaking out saying it's not working, that just gives up. So it's versus if you do it yourself, you don't usually feel that way because you trust what you're doing. So anyways, I would say for the most part, it's we have worked with people that have done it themselves and been happy to give it to us. And then I'm grateful a lot of people just recognize that it's there's people who specialize in this for a reason. I think of it as one of those things, like, this is an expertise play. It's not like you're hiring someone to do the floors in one of your rehabs where it's like, you could do it, they could do it. It's commoditized information. This is like hiring a tax advisor or hiring a lawyer or something like that, where a lot of the times it's not that pushing the button takes a lot of time. It's that knowing which button to push takes a lot of experience. And the true value that comes from working with an expert, even more so than time saved or anything, just comes in better results. And the gap in revenue is like everybody always thinks about costs that come out of their bank account, right? Like, here's my cost of a credit card or something. Sure, the biggest cost in most businesses is opportunity cost. It's the difference between the revenue that they would have if they had the right people on their team and the revenue that they do have when they're doing a bunch of things halfway and they're trying to manage their own PPC and stuff like that. So I think that if you look at that amount of money, it's a heck of a lot more than what it costs to get the actual expert on your team. And that's the real value.
So you're telling me that if I'm taking seller calls, doing appointments, wholesaling my own deals, doing a couple of flips, and I can't run part-time at my PPC? Come on, man. I can do it. No. You know?
Yeah. You can try. Yeah. I can tell you that.
For sure. I can tell you what. I've worked the 80 hours a week, and I don't recommend it. I like the easy button, and you pay somebody for their knowledge and just to give you peace of mind, and you know, you move on. Like you say, opportunity cost. I like that actually. It's the biggest expense.
Well, you say the easy button. Yeah, you say the easy button like it's like you're being lazy or something. But I mean, everybody I know that has a killer business, they press the easy button a lot.
Yeah.
So I don't. Yeah, it's a good thing. You know, delegation is it's a real skill. It's a real thing that differentiates those that do well from those that don't.
So I'm going to hit a topic here. You know, for any kind of lead generation, right? Let's just say, right? Say, hey, I'm doing single family. I hire your firm, and you guys are doing my Facebook ads, my SEO. You guys doing my pay per click. It still comes down. You guys bringing in, we're getting leads in, but it still comes down to me, to my company, to be able to execute, right? You know, be able to do the sales calls, be able to follow up, be able to close the deals, right? So kind of talk to me a little bit about that, just to make sure you set expectations, right, for your clients, where, you know, just because they get a deal flow, right, they still have, that's just the first part, right? I mean, you still have a whole process. So do you talk to your clients about stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely. It's here's the really trick thing about it, Javier. And you, I'm sure you've dealt with this to some extent. Everybody thinks they have a great acquisitions process. Statistically, some of our clients do way, way better than others, and including some people that think they have it really dialed in. So the reality of it is, I think if you're doing any type of marketing, you have to be at the top of your game when it comes to the acquisition side. That's where the real money's made. The marketing provides that opportunity, but that's where the real money's made. And it's you have to be humble enough to like look inward at your company and find the flaws and optimize those flaws. And if you're running a company that does direct to seller marketing, like your product is the marketing, especially for wholesalers, you're not working with real estate. You're working with contracts and sales, and that's your whole thing. So like, you better be good at that. The marketing, the sales aspect, that's like the whole business. If you're flipping, that's an important part of the business. And of course you have some value at other places, but if you're interested in hearing it, we have done some pretty deep analyses in these things. Interestingly enough, we have a database of literally millions and millions and millions of dollars of digital marketing spend, and basically what kind of lead conversion came from it in different markets with different teams and what those teams were doing and all that kind of stuff. And what we do is we take the top 10% of teams from a closing percentage standpoint, and we compare those to the bottom 50% of teams. And I interview like the people individually on the team. I interview the company owner, acquisitions directors, et cetera, to understand like, how is this company working? And we look at the data, like in their CRM and of all the different stuff that's happening. And we generally found three things that differentiate those that are at the top of their game from those that aren't. And these are things that generally all the companies at the very top were doing and almost none of the companies at the bottom were doing. So it's not just like tips and tricks, like I found this work for me or whatever. Like this is just like statistically across our whole database, what are the things that, not just something that someone good was doing, but something that everybody who was doing well was doing. And the first thing with that is urgency. Like when PPC lead comes in, you probably noticed this when you worked with those leads, they were probably your fastest closing lead of any channel that you had. They definitely are more ready to go quickly and are probably reaching out to other people, makes them really competitive. Our clients that were doing the best from a conversion standpoint are getting the leads within 60 seconds, generally after they come in, which is a tight time frame, but makes a huge difference. The second thing being assuming motivation. Generally, those that are doing best, they don't qualify their leads very heavily. They make sure this person has a house to sell, and then they just go on the appointment. They're not like filling them out on price and thinking like, I don't know if it's worth my time to drive out there. We even have some clients that will drive out there. If they can't get a hold of the person, they'll door knock them just to like give them opportunity to talk to the seller. And they get some of their biggest deals that way. But just assuming that leads are motivated. And then the last thing is about I call it quality first interactions. It's about that initial step after the lead does come in. What a lot of people don't realize, I think, about sales is, you know, we feel like we won when we win the contract. But the reality is the contract's not won when the contract is signed. The contract is won usually in the first 10 or 20 seconds of a phone call conversation, and then it's signed at some later point. I'm sure you've done this when you've evaluated different companies to work with some things. You kind of have this bias in the back of your mind based on first impressions. Like, I feel like I like that company. You're kind of rooting for this company to work. All the evidence you get, you're just starting to use that to try to justify this just emotional reaction that you had initially, that this one company is better than this other company. Even the most logical people generally think like this. And especially motivated sellers are usually not the most rational people. So it's basically, if you have like a VA trying to do these calls and they're not setting great first impressions, they're not saying the things to the seller that makes them not want to go to anybody else, they're not building rapport super well, it's not about just like setting an appointment. Because if I'm a seller, I go to you, I have a problem, and all I do when I get to you is you set an appointment to solve my problem later, I still have pain and I'm still going to look for someone else. But if I can talk to you and you can make me feel comfortable, and even though my problem's not solved, you can give me certainty that I feel like my problem's going to be solved, then I don't have pain anymore. Then I don't have any reason to go to anybody else. And then when I talk to other people in the future and they pitch me and different things like that, I'm going to have this bias in the back of my mind that I'm going to work with you. And we found that all of our clients that are doing exceptionally well, they master that first call. They have excellent conversations. They build rapport. And in doing so, they eliminate competition. And that's what helps them get the deal. Does that make sense?
That's awesome. That's actually really good information. You know, you got to be quick, right? You got to have a sense of urgency. And that's true. I mean, I remember you used to get those calls. You got to get on quickly. You book that appointment, right? You know, just, you know, get on the phone and like the first, you know, 15, 20 seconds, make sure that you build rapport. They like you, right? What is that? What is that? Everybody has that alligator brain where they either want to eat you, they want to mate with you, or they want to kill you within like the first millisecond that they talk to you, right? So you want everybody to
mate. This is the first time hearing this, but yeah.
Yeah, so basically everybody has an alligator brain, right? Alligator brain. So when you meet somebody right away, you either want to eat them, kill them, or mate with them, right? So you want everybody to mate with you because that means they like you. So not eat you or kill you, right? That's what an alligator thinks when he sees you. Anyway, so you got pretty much a split second to go ahead and build that rapport. You know, so you got your first 15, 20 seconds. That's really, really key. And follow up and all that. So that's super important because you can help out with the lead gen, you know, get the leads in, or people out there sending mailers, whatever they're doing to get their leads, right? And then you still need to go through your whole process. So I'm glad you do that with your clients. You take the best ones and you kind of compare everybody else because it's definitely very helpful. I mean, that's just, you know, something, a bonus that you guys offer, which is awesome. And you can take so much data from a lot of people. So that's definitely really cool. I'm actually very... I get that urge real quick, like, we buy some houses, but you know, like, no, my wife would get, she'd be like, no, she'd buy some houses, not right now. Anyways,
focus.
But right. It's just because, you know, everything's just so much better than it was 5 years ago. You know, it's just, you know, everything more dialed in, there's more data, there's a lot of, you know, there's more competition, but you know what? It doesn't matter, guys. It doesn't matter how much competition, right? I mean, Brandon just said it right now, urgency. You know, solve somebody's problem and build rapport right away. It doesn't matter how much competition is out there. You're still going to be able to close some of these projects.
Someone's always going to still be the best.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, I love competition. Yeah.
Yep.
Like, my favorite markets to do PPC in are the ones that people are afraid of.
Yeah, there you go.
Because it raises the bar, right? You get to see how good you really are. And it's exceeding the measures in those markets that's going to make you even better in the other ones.
For right? Sure. Like, so people tell me all the time. Don't buy a commercial property in California. It's so expensive. Like, I can't wait until I buy some kind of commercial property in California. I haven't found one yet, but I'm going to find a good deal. But I'm going to buy one in LA, San Diego, San Francisco, somewhere, because people make money, right? Just like saying, oh, San Diego's is a tough market. LA is a crazy market. San Francisco is a crazy market. Well, people are doing projects there. You know, it's not like it's, you know, people are still doing deals every day. So
absolutely. It just means the bar's higher, but the bar is usually higher for a reason.
Yep.
It usually means there's more opportunity.
Yeah, so for sure.
That's why I'm that's why I love those kinds of scenarios. I think if you shy away from competition, you'll never be your best version of yourself or the best company that you could be or whatever the case is. And I think that most people get enjoyment from working for the company they work with or from owning the company that they work with, they own, because they believe in the quality of what they're doing.
There you go.
So I think people can be more satisfied taking on bigger challenges, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And I think competition is good because it makes you grow, you know?
Yeah.
It makes you grow. And if you're not growing, you're dying. So make sure you grow.
For sure.
So talk to me a little bit about like your typical client, or like say somebody comes in and says, hey, I want to work with you, or a consultation. And you know, what's kind of the process, right? You know, do you go like Facebook ads, SEO, pay-per-click, a little bit of everything, or kind of tell me kind of what's the process?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the first step is just to determine what's actually right for this person. So we'll start out with an analysis of the market and our recent data on different channels and stuff like that. It doesn't mean, you know, this isn't like the kind of thing where there's like a deliverable usually. Oftentimes we'll know a thing or two. Like sometimes this can be a really easy thing just based on what I know about an area, and sometimes it's harder. But we'll do that analysis and basically figure out like what is the right strategy. And that sometimes has to do with the market. It also has a lot to do with the company. Like for example, if this company must have deals within 6 months, SEO is not going to be a good play. PPC or Facebook ads might be able to. Sometimes, like especially if budgets are really small, we skew towards Facebook. A little bit bigger budget, PPC can be a good fit. We'd love to do both if the budget's sufficient, so we could be a little bit more diversified. So anyways, this whole strategic analysis and everything, it's not a one-size-fits-all. We definitely have markets that don't fit the mold and stuff like that. That's where we have to talk with whoever it is to figure out what that is, just based on their company, the market, everything. From that point, it's pretty simple. We just get started with that strategy. We set a start date. We just start getting everything set up towards that date. And really on an ongoing basis, it's a process where we just set the strategy for a month, gather a month's worth of data. We meet up with the client again after the month, analyze what happened, make some changes, execute again for a month, and just keep on doing that over and over again forever. Just that constant process of gathering data and then improving, and gathering data, then improving, is what gets our clients usually to where they're looking to be.
So what do you recommend, right? Somebody coming in saying, hey, would you have a, well, depends where they're at, I'm assuming, but say somewhere in the Midwest, coming in with a certain budget and giving it enough time, right? Say they want to do the SEO, the Facebook, pay-per-click. Like, what would you say? Like, hey, Javier, you know, you're going to invest in St. Louis, you know, hey, you're going to probably need, you know, X budget, and, you know, you got to give us, you know, a year, 9 months, 6 months, 2 years, whatever. I mean, what do you guys, like, what would be your kind of your budget and your time frame?
Good question. So time frame is probably the easiest thing to answer. We always recommend 6 months at least. Really, the longer you give yourself, the greater your chance of success. I think 6 months is sufficient in most cases. So I definitely think it's a good idea. A lot of people have this mindset with marketing channels of, I'm going to try it and see if it works. I'd say with the vast majority of marketing channels, the reality is they work. And it's just, are you going to figure it out or not? And I think it's much better to have the mindset of, I'm going to do this for so long that it'd be unreasonable for it not to work, than to say, I'm just going to try it and see if it works. Because the reality is most channels just don't work if you try them to see if they work, unless you get lucky. And then you run into people who like had success and they're like, the channel dropped off. And it's like, no, you just were lucky at the beginning. You hear this stuff all the time, especially with smaller investors, just kind of jumping in and out of all kinds of different marketing channels. So that's where we tend to focus on companies that are a little bit more stable and willing to see it the same way we do, in the sense that we got to give it 6 months. How it works within that. Budgets are highly variable. The smallest budgets we ever work with are about $3,000 a month. So that's like 18 grand over 3 months. I'm sorry, over 6 months. And then the largest starting out are around maybe 20,000 for someone that doesn't have previous campaigns running. Once people are running with us, or if they're transferring from another agency, we'll regularly work with budgets in the tens of thousands. But it's not usually someplace that you start. You usually have to ramp up to that. And some markets don't even allow that. If you're in St. Louis, Missouri, you're probably just not going to spend 20 grand a month on digital marketing. It's going to be a smaller campaign because it's a smaller area, versus a place like LA where you could easily spend 100 grand a month. If you want to. So anyways, that's kind of how we gauge it out. So it does kind of depend on the market. The market kind of sets the cap. Also, what's setting the cap is kind of a time frame. It's got to be sustainable for what you're working with. But all that said, you need enough budget to be able to have enough data on a monthly basis to analyze things and stuff like that. And that's kind of dependent on the market. But we never go below $3,000 on that. So picture a range. Three is the bottom. The max is whatever you can sustain for 6 months or what your market can handle. Anywhere in that range is good. And if there is no range there because you can't even sustain like $1,000 for 6 months or something, then then it's just not like a fit yet. And we wait for people to get a little bit more stability in the business first.
For sure. And then do you like block off markets? Do you have three people per market, or how do you break that down?
Yeah, it's not about like a certain number per market because the reality is what we're focused on is how many clients can we take without negatively affecting any of those that we have in an area. And that has to do more with levels of competition and market saturation amongst our clients than it does about a certain number of clients. So we monitor all of those metrics, but the general trend is larger markets, of course, we're going to take more clients, and smaller markets, we're going to take less clients. A rule of thumb is like 1 per million people or so in a market. Although there's a lot of factors, like I said, what it really comes down to is the data. We actually see that when we take more clients in a market, the results improve up to a point. It's that point where we cut it. Because at some point, like getting more people means more data. Yeah. And that data helps everybody. But at some point, it gets beyond having that 360-degree view. And it gets to the point where, as an extreme example, if we have 20 clients in Raleigh, then there's only so much digital marketing to go around. Sure. In Raleigh. It's a little bit too much competition there. But if you had like two compared to one, we have a much better idea of what's going on in the market from a data standpoint.
Awesome. Now, so tell me kind of data. So how different was it? Was it different at all during like COVID, like the first 6 months of 2020? Like, did that throw like a wrench in your data or did maybe it went well, or just talk to me about that. I'm curious.
Yeah, it's a good question. So a lot of the stuff stayed really similar when it comes to, well, there's a few things. So the first change that we saw was a dip in ROI from the time just before COVID happened, because some of the deals that were contracted in that time weren't able to be dispositioned because buyers got skittish right at the beginning of COVID. Most people got over that like within a month, but there was that time where like a lot of people just stopped buying anything because they didn't know what was going on and, you know, just rather kind of sit on their hands for a minute. So that's like I guess a short blip is like some of the marketing returns from the dollars spent like right before things went crazy. You know, we thought things were going good, we got contracts, but then the disposition ability of the contracts dropped out. Come COVID a little bit later, that had actually a really positive effect. It's one of the cheapest times in digital marketing I've ever seen was right after COVID started. In that early part of that year, we had about a 50% drop in our cost per lead on average across clients. So what that means is basically they were getting double the number of leads for the same ad spend. And then that kind of slowly climbed up until by Q4 or so of that year, it was about how it was typically. Interestingly enough, the same thing's happening now. We're actually close to the average cost per lead that we saw during COVID on Google right now. Facebook's more expensive because the platform costs have gone up. Google itself is actually significantly cheaper in many markets right now than it was a few months ago. And it's a factor of Google being like a marketplace driven platform. And that meaning just that the price adjusts based on an invisible hand of like supply and demand economics. And what that means is if people start to get scared and drop out, then it gets a lot cheaper. Things get super cheap and your direct mail is still going to cost you 40 cents a card or whatever it costs you. But yep, PPC, true. The reality is you might pay pennies on the dollar compared to what you used to pay because the price goes down. Because all that Google does is they just charge you whatever other people are willing to pay. So that's where we're already seeing a big drop in costs on Google.
Ah, very interesting. This is great. Like, I like data, but you know, I see a squirrel. You know, I see a squirrel, and I'm like, you know, I can't focus on it. But it definitely. But like you said, like you got to love it. You got to be in it. You got to be 100% in it. And I'm not. So it's pretty cool how it kind of changed. Yeah. And you can track everything.
Yeah, it's crazy how it goes. And it's interesting. People talk all day long, like at different masterminds I go to and stuff, but like, you don't have your numbers, you can't run your business and stuff like that. And I completely agree with that. Like, everybody's got to get their numbers. But I firmly believe for every business owner that doesn't have numbers, there's another business owner that has numbers and makes horrible decisions based on those numbers. So it's I think a lot of it is like having the data, but then it's also really knowing how to use that data. And I think that's where that's where the magic happens. One, that's what we're trying to do as a company. One, we have the largest database that exists in the industry because we track things actually closed loop, like what's generating deals for our clients, not just leads, which is where most marketing agencies stop. And then second, we have people that know how to use that data in the most intelligent ways. And it makes a huge, huge difference.
Ah, very, very interesting. Brandon, so BatemanCollective.com/RELP. So that's the link that's going to be in the show notes. People can go check out the website. Anything else you'd like to add before I go to my favorite part of the show?
Nothing at this time. I'm about to see how that goes.
Awesome. Yeah. And you're the first person that I have. I think we have 170 episodes, something like that. And you're the first person that I have that this digital marketing, PPC, Facebook, and things like that. So I knew you weren't collected genius because I had seen your website before. When I saw the bio and stuff, I said, great. So definitely going to have him on if he's a CG guy. All right.
Yeah, I love the group.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's throw a little plug in for CG. Anybody needs a mastermind, that's the go.
All right. I tell everybody I wouldn't be where I'm at if it was not for masterminds. I can guarantee you that 100%. All right, cool. I'm going to share my screen. Let me know when you see it.
All right, I see it.
All right, so we're going to ask Brandon three random questions. Got nothing to do with real estate. Just three random questions on the Naked Truth Roulette. So let's go with question number one. All right off the bat, the best question on the roulette, which I have multiple times. Well, actually, no, we missed it. Hopefully, we get it next time. But this is close enough. If you're in an elevator and you have to meet somebody and pitch them something, right? This is why you should use me for pay-per-click. Do you brush your teeth or do you brush your hair?
No, probably my hair. My hair goes a little crazy if it's not brushed properly. So that's okay. I go right there. But I'd like to do both if that's an option.
Yeah, you got to choose one. Either one.
If we're choosing one or another, you don't want to see my afro hair.
Yeah, and masks, they're gone now, right? You don't need masks anymore, so you can't be wearing a mask. Awesome. All right, cool. So you do your hair. Man, it depends. Depends how your morning breath is. It's probably not that bad. All right, second question for Brandon. If you can take any celebrity on a date, living or dead, who would it be?
Oh, wow. This is a tough one. I'm I'm absolutely horrible at pop culture. Like even the word celebrities is scary to me because I'm just trying to think of a celebrity. But if I did, what was the question about what do you do?
Yeah, who would you take on a date?
Talk to them or?
Dead or alive?
Oh, take on a date. Well, then it has to be a woman celebrity. I honestly don't know. I'm trying I don't know celebrities. I could throw out some names of women I've heard out in the world or something, but it would be just a completely random thing.
All right. Celebrity, movie star, anything, public figure, a politician,
public figure. I don't know.
I'm gonna give you a pass, Brandon. If something comes to mind, you let me know. Let's go with the next question. All right, let's roll.
I'll let you know.
All right.
I think I've shut all of the celebrity information out of my brain. I don't watch the news. I don't look at any celebrity stuff. It's an extreme deficiency of mine.
For sure. No problem. I have five on my list. I can name off right away. What was this question? I missed a question. Well, we're chatting with you and I missed a question. So let's do another one. It popped up and then went away. So we're doing a fourth question here. Let's roll. Let's see what it is. All right, cool. This is a good one. What is your favorite quote?
Favorite quote? Well, I'm going to butcher this, but I did just read one in a book recently from, what's his name? Jeff Bezos, where he essentially said that business is kind of like a baseball game, except in business, you have to swing really hard because the reality is in a baseball game, you have a finite capped outcome. If you were to swing as hard as you can, the most you can get is just, four runs versus in the game of business, sometimes you can win 1,000 runs, so to speak, on a single hit. So statistically, it just makes sense to swing really hard. I thought it was an interesting analogy. So that's something I read just this week. Again, I probably butchered it. So if you want to actually know what it says, maybe look it up. But that's the concept.
All right. So fourth question for you, since we missed the one about the celebrity, is cartoon. When you were a kid, what was your favorite cartoon?
Oh, wow. Yeah, this is stretching way back. I know for sure I watched SpongeBob. So there's something there. I know I probably watch other stuff, but for some reason, that's the one that just sticks to my mind the most.
Yeah, I think it had like subliminal messages and it just zombied you out, you know?
Yeah, probably. I'm like, man, SpongeBob. Yeah, I'd probably be like a way smarter person today if it weren't for it. But
watching SpongeBob, you know. It's like you're watching SpongeBob. Like, no, I don't want to. Once you start watching SpongeBob, you just can't stop, you know? You just can't stop. So. Awesome.
Yeah, that's funny.
Brandon, I appreciate you being on the Naked Truth Roulette.
Love the applause. That's a nice touch.
Awesome. Cool. Well, Brandon, thank you so much for being on the show. If anybody wants to get a hold of you, what's the best hold of your company? What's the best way?
Probably the best way is through that link that you're throwing in the show notes.
Okay.
If anybody wants to see me personally, you can always reach out on Facebook or something with my name. But yeah, that's the best way to get a hold of us. Probably the next step for most people would be going to our website to schedule a strategy call. And that's where someone from my team would kind of dig into what makes sense for you. The other thing is one pretty cool value add that we do is a free analysis of any campaigns that you're running. So if you have ever run a campaign on Facebook, Google, or SEO, and either it didn't work or it isn't working, or it worked, but you felt like it could have been better, or you want a second opinion, or whatever the case is, my team will take a look at that and basically for free and kind of give you a big old list of all the things that we would do to improve the campaign that you can go off and do yourself, but probably won't because it's too hard. And that's, I think, a pretty good value add. It's also really helpful for us to analyze fit at the beginning, because sometimes we look at campaigns and we're like, you know, honestly, this could be better, but maybe we could make this campaign 15% better, but it needs to be 300% better to actually work, because your side's not working and you're not closing these leads as well as you should be, or something like that. And knowing that is helpful, just talking to someone really upfront.
Awesome.
Because I think where a lot of people go wrong is like something doesn't work in the marketing, but they don't know what's wrong. We can at least pinpoint what's wrong. And if it's the marketing side, we'll fix it. If it's not, we'll tell you. And then you know what you have to fix before you try and do more marketing.
That's definitely value add, man. That's definitely very important, because not many people do that. They get you the leads.
Huge, and huge value add.
You're on your own. Like, you got to close them, you know? So.
Yep. And we'll analyze where it's breaking down. Like, is it between leads and net leads, or is it net leads and contracts, or contracts to deals, or whatever the case is, because we have all the benchmarks of what's typical. So like, if you have a marketing funnel that works and one that's not, there's going to be some difference in that, and it's going to be at some stage in the funnel. So,
like, so what would you say? Here's a bonus for everybody. So what would you say, like, your best company as far as like, let's do pay-per-click, like how many leads per closing on a pay-per-click?
10 to 15 is pretty typical. 10 is like gold standard, 15, not as good, but doesn't mean you're horrible. Lead quality is also a big factor.
Right. So say each lead cost you $200, right? You spend $3,000 and you could possibly, if you wholesale in or flipping, whatever, you can make, you know, 15, you can make 20, you can make 30, you can make 50, you know? So.
Totally. Yeah. No. Yeah. And the cost per lead varies a ton by market and, you know, but also the values, you know, we have some markets where leads are super expensive, but they are always good because the deals are big, and cheaper markets tend to be cheaper. That's the really nice thing about PPC specifically is the, there's that invisible hand, like I mentioned, supply and demand marketplace. If your area is one where the leads aren't as valuable, then they also tend to be cheaper. And, you know, perhaps on the worst side, if yours is one where they're really valuable, it's going to be an expensive game, but worth it.
Awesome. Brandon, thanks so much for being on the show. Appreciate your time. I am Javier, the host. Don't lose your shirt. Just as promised, I like to give out free stuff, some tools and tips that's actually helped me in my business. There's nothing out there like getting some free stuff that people have spent a lot of time, energy in putting together. It's like a referral. Somebody asked me for an electrician. You don't know what kind of brain damage I had to go through to give you this good referral for an electrician. You got to appreciate referrals from people, okay? Because they went through a lot to find that one good person. So I'm going to give you my due diligence template for buying apartment buildings. It's attached to monday.com. It is an affiliate link, so they're going to send me a kickback. Not a lot, but a little bit. But you can either download it as an Excel, or you can put it on monday.com. Monday.com is pretty cool because it's a project management platform software. It's super cool. I use it all the time for my social media, for my team, tracking deals, doing tasks for everybody. It's actually pretty good. You can track construction. It's a project management platform. It's really cool. Monday, like the day, monday.com. So my due diligence checklist is there for free for you.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.